Men will die, but the fabrics of our free institutions remain unshaken.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold and written by Gene Holloway. Mr. President at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Before we bring you Edward Arnold as Mr. President, a word or two. Rarely before in the history of our country has the office of the presidency been of such vital importance as it is today. As you know, the Constitution is very specific about the powers and duties of the president, making him somewhat subject to the will of Congress in domestic matters, but almost entirely on his own in our dealings with other nations. Our foreign relations are vital to every one of us, and the president is our personal representative in such matters. Into this important picture enter the Mr. President's stories, telling in warm human terms of the adventures, the troubles, and the joys of the men who've held the nation's highest office. You, our listeners, have the added thrill of testing your historical knowledge when you try to identify the president of each story. And I'll see if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based.
Here's a story that happened in Washington a few years ago. Listen closely and see if you can tell who the story concerns. The Vice President of the United States was angrily pacing his office, talking to one of his political advisers.
Well, I admit there's a good deal in what you say, Mr. Vice President. I certainly agree with you.
Well, I should think you would admit there was something in what I say, Senator Compton. The man the President is suggesting for the collectorship of the Port of New York is and has been consistently our political enemy. I myself held that position at one time, and I know what an important position it is.
You not only held it, you're Vice President of the United States now because you held it. When the last president removed you from the position, the party gave you the vice presidential nomination as a gesture of faith to vindicate your removal.
And now the president wants to give the collectorship to a man who has been against everything we've stood for, and who...
Well,
has...
I'll tell you how I feel about it. I'm willing to resign my seat in the Senate, and I think Senator Platt will feel the same way. I'm willing to resign and appeal to the legislature of the state of New York to re-elect me and Senator Platt, if he resigns with me, as a protest against the administration.
I think that's an excellent idea. I'll go to Albany with you. We'll all fight together. I haven't been a politician all these years without learning how to put up a good fight. We'll get that appointment killed if it's the last thing we do in this world.
I'm glad to see that the office of vice president hasn't done anything to hurt your political thinking.
Once a politician, Mr. Compton, always a politician.
I'll get hold of Senator Platt right away, and we'll get right to work on this. I don't think the president's man will hold the collectorship of the Port of New York very long.
He won't if I have anything to say about it, Mr. Compton. Oh, Mr. Platt, Mr. Compton, come on in.
It certainly is a hot day in Albany, Mr. Vice President.
Yes, the weather's hot, and so is everyone's temper.
You know, I've been reading the newspapers. The newspapers seem to think I'm out of order in coming here to Albany and publicly coming out in this fight.
You've been reading the newspapers that favor the president's appointment.
No, no, I've been reading every newspaper I could put my hands on. They're all of the same opinion.
Well, the decision to come was your own, Mr. Vice President.
Yes, I know, but it's discouraging just the same. A man has to fight for what he believes in. That's all I'm doing, that's all I've ever done.
A man who fights for what he believes in isn't always the most popular man.
Mr. Platt, do you always fight for what you believe in?
Well, let's put it this way. I always believe in what I'm fighting for, Mr. Vice President. I'm primarily a politician, not an idealist.
Well, it's possible to be both.
Possible, perhaps, but not practical.
You know, I think I'm a little mixed up today.
We all are. Mixed up and discouraged. But things will be better tomorrow. We've only begun this fight. We'll get that man out of the Custom House of New York. Don't you worry about it.
I hope so.
Compton, why don't you and the Vice President go down to New York on the Hudson River boat tomorrow? There won't be any work done over the holiday. I think a change would be good for both of you. Have a little rest, a little relaxation.
All right with me. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think I'd like to go. It'll give me a chance to have a visit with my daughter. And yes, I think I'd be glad of a day or two away from here. By all means, let's do it.
We'll be docking any minute now.
Yeah. You know, my wife always loved this trip. It's hard to believe that she's gone.
It's been a year, hasn't it?
Yes, a year. Whenever I go to New York, I go to her room. Everything is there just as she left it. Even the needle and the sewing she was working on. No, she used to say to me, fight for what you believe in. If no one else believes in it but you, fight for it. But don't waste your energies on the things you don't believe in. I miss her terribly. She was always by my side. And she always seemed to know when I needed her most. And if she wasn't there, she'd find some way of sending a message.
You know, you're a strange man in many ways.
What do you say then?
I don't think I've ever heard you talk about your wife before. And I think I've only seen your little girl once.
No, and she's very, very much like her mother. I never believed in putting my family in the glare of what I have to go through. A man's job is one thing. His home and his family are another world completely.
It's good for a man in your position to let the country know about his home life. You could have some pictures taken of your little girl, some of your son.
No, no, no. My son's away at school and my little girl is leading the sheltered normal life that every child in America is entitled to. She's going to continue to lead it. If I can never give her anything else, at least I will give her that. Her life is not public property.
Well, we're getting in. It's going to be fine weather, I think, for our holiday.
Yes, and it's an exciting sight, isn't it? Look at that skyline. Peter Stuyvesant's New York City and George Washington's and Alexander Hamilton's and little Jim Madison.
But this wasn't their home.
No, but they walked along this river, spent days of their lives here, planned events here that would have shaped the nation. They and thousands before them and after them. You know, I never walk along a street in New York without thinking who walked here yesterday and who will walk here tomorrow. Did a president of the United States perchance pause to light a pipe beside that building? Will a future president pause there tomorrow? History is moving all around us every moment. Who knows but what a future president of the United States is on this boat right now. Perhaps a child that pushed against us on the gangplank. Perhaps a serious young man in glasses. Who knows? Destiny may already be waiting in the shadows for someone on this very boat.
Well, all I know is we're in and New York's waiting for us, and we're on a holiday. Come on.
Mr. Vice President! Mr. Vice President,
someone's calling.
Oh, nonsense. They're probably calling some vice president of a bank.
Mr. Compton!
Yes?
Thank heaven I was able to find you, sir.
Well, Chester, what are you doing down here at the wharf?
Mr. Platt telegraphed from Albany to tell me to meet you here. I have bad news for you both. The President of the United States was shot by an assassin less than 1 hour ago.
Come in.
Well, there's no further news from Washington. President is about as he was. Not expected to live.
I know. I'm going down to talk to Senator Jones of Nevada. I'm going to ask him to return to Washington with me. My place is there now.
You don't wish me to accompany you?
My friend, you and I have been associates for a long time now. We've worked together. We've worked well together. I've respected you as a man and as the fine politician that you are.
I can return that compliment wholeheartedly.
But under the circumstances, I don't feel that I should return to Washington with a man who is one of the political bosses of this country, which you are and are known to be.
In other words, you are discarding me.
No, no. That isn't what I mean. and I hope you won't take it that way. I left Washington as a politician. I am returning not as a politician, but as the Vice President of the United States. In a dark hour in the nation's history. I'm returning to wait within call if I'm needed, and I tell you quite honestly that I pray to God that I'm not needed. I've had my political differences with the president, but I respect him, admire him, even love him all the same. I am not returning to Washington as a politician, and I don't want the advice of politicians now.
I won't say I agree with you. I don't agree with you. During the days ahead, you're going to need advice and guidance.
Not of a political nature, Mr. Compton.
You're not a popular man throughout the country. Don't lose sight of that fact.
I still don't want the advice and guidance of the politicians, Mr. Compton. The politicians in my own party or in any other party.
I never thought I'd live to hear you talk like that. You, of all people.
No, no, nor did I ever think I'd talk like that. But something happens to you when the shadow of the White House falls across your path. I can't explain it. But your whole attitude changes. A politician is always thinking, how can I achieve what I want? How can I get what I want? There's nothing wrong with it. That's politics. But tonight, in the shadow that has fallen across my life, all I can think now is, how can I give what I want to give? How can I be of the best service to my country and to the man who lies between life and death? That's all that counts. That's all that matters. So I will return to Washington without you, Mr. Compton.
Beginning to think you were never coming back from that cabinet meeting.
Yeah, it was quite a session, Senator Jones. Quite a session.
The president's still holding his own.
Thank God for that.
Here. Sit down before the fire and rest. Dinner will be ready soon.
Thank you.
Your little girl's been having a wonderful afternoon. She went to the park.
You know, I'll never be able to tell you how grateful I am to you for taking us into your own home.
Yeah, the way the reporters are badgering you, you wouldn't have had much peace anyplace else, I'm afraid. Tell me, what happened at the cabinet meeting?
Did you ever walk into a nice house in your summer clothes?
It was as bad as that?
It was just as bad as that. You would have thought that I was personally responsible for the president's wound. They all stood there and glared at me. For a moment, no one said, come in. No one said, hello. No one said, how are you? Or, get the heck out of here. No one said a word. I finally decided just to walk out and forget about speaking to the cabinet. But someone finally spoke to me, yes. And then the others thought out a little, too. Not much, though. They didn't like me. They resented me. And they made no bones about it. It wasn't a very happy session.
Anything come of it?
Yes, they all felt that I should stay in Washington as long as the president was in danger, which, of course, I will. You know, I glanced through some of the papers on the way home.
Oh, forget about the newspapers.
How can I? Do you know what most of the papers are saying? If I become president, Compton will be what amounts to a prime minister and will rule the country through me. And the former president of the United States says that it will be a national calamity if I become the president.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it looks as though everyone in the country seems to think I'll make a terrible president.
Daddy, I didn't know you were here.
Oh, hello, sweetheart.
You look tired, Daddy.
Well, it was a hard day.
Are you going to be president of the United States?
Now, what on earth gave you that idea?
I'm sure that no one in the house has spoken to her about it.
Oh, no. No one in the house said anything. Mother told me.
Well, what did you say now?
I said Mother told me. She did. She used to say it all the time. Someday, she said, your father will be president of the United States.
She said that?
Lots of times.
But she never told me.
Oh, she said not to tell you. She said it would upset you.
Upset me? Why?
She said, when the time came for you to be president, then was the time for you to start thinking about it, and not before.
I wonder why she ever said a thing like that.
It's strange in the light of the circumstances, isn't it?
Yes.
She said you had the cap... the cape...
The capabilities?
The capabilities of a president. She said you'd make a wonderful president.
She said I'd make a wonderful president?
And, Daddy?
Yes, Nellie?
You will.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you. But Daddy hopes it won't be necessary for him to be the president of the United States.
If it is, you'll be wonderful.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Monday, October 24th, 1949. That's tomorrow. An important date in world history. The day when the cornerstone will be laid for the permanent home of the United Nations in New York City. These buildings that will comprise the headquarters of the United Nations are a symbol of the hopes and aspirations of peoples throughout the world. We wish every American could be right there to see the ceremonies. But since that's impossible, we'll do the next best thing and invite you to attend by listening to ABC. In a special broadcast, you'll hear the principal address by President Truman, who'll be introduced by General Romulo, President of the United Nations General Assembly. Among the other participants will be Mayor William O'Dwyer of New York City and Secretary General Trygve Lie. So don't miss sharing in this important event broadcast tomorrow over most of these same ABC stations. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Well, have you guessed the name of the man our story is about? It all really happened, you know, in Washington just a few years ago. Gradually, the president seemed to improve, and the vice president left Washington and returned to New York. Conditions were in a bad state of confusion at the nation's capital. And finally, the postmaster general was sent by the cabinet to sound the vice president out on a very important subject.
Mr. Vice President, since the president's illness, he's been able to perform only one official act. He's been able to sign only one paper. We haven't been able to hold any cabinet meetings with him. He just isn't able to perform the duties of the office.
I realize that, and I feel very concerned about it, but there's nothing that can be done except pray for his recovery.
But the administration is drifting to the four winds. There are important matters at hand that need action. Something must be done, Mr. Vice President.
Well, what do you suggest, Mr. James?
Well, sir, certain members of the cabinet feel that you should be urged to take the president's place.
How can I take the president's place? I have no right to do that.
If any man has the right to the office, it would be you. The Constitution says that the vice president is to take over the duties and powers of the president.
Yes, when the president has left office because of death, removal, or resignation. None of these terms apply. Well,
I am sure that the intent of those who drew up the Constitution was that if the president was unable to discharge his duties for any reason, the vice president should take over.
It doesn't say that. And believe me, if I stepped into the president's chair under these circumstances, I would be most bitterly attacked throughout the length and breadth of this country.
Then, are you refusing to take the chair because of what the country will say about you?
You make it sound like cowardice.
I'm asking you if it is.
No, I don't feel that I have any legal right to take the office of president, and I will not for one moment consider taking it.
But the nation is without a leader. What is the next move? Something must be done.
Then the next move is up to the Congress.
But Congress will not convene until December. Only the president can summon Congress to a special session, and the president is in no condition to do that.
Well, he may recover and be able to take his own place at the head of the government again. Please God, he may recover.
You absolutely refuse to take his place.
I cannot take his place. Ellen. Ellen. I've come to your room alone to ask you to help me if you can. These days are so full of questions, so full of problems. I'm like a man adrift in a rowboat on a wild sea. No one to turn to. No one to ask comfort of. If only you were here beside me. If only you were here. To sit there in the lamplight, to pick up your sewing again. Oh, Ellen, if you were only here.
No, no, no. Why do you ask that?
I thought I heard you crying.
No, I was just praying, my child.
What's this sewing, Daddy?
Oh, no, don't touch that.
Why?
Well, your mother was working on that.
But I've been sewing on it, too.
You've been sewing on it, too?
Yes. I knew she wanted to finish it, so every night I've come in here and turned on the light, and every night I've sat here sewing.
You sat there sewing?
Yes. Just as she sat. I thought maybe some night you'd come in and talk to me the way you used to talk to her.
Oh, my child, my child.
I miss her too, Daddy. I miss her too.
I know you do. I know you do. You run along to bed now, sweetheart, please. Hmm?
Yes, Daddy. Night.
Good night, darling. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you for showing me that you are still here.
Coming.
Oh, John, what are you doing here in New York at this hour? What's happened?
I've come to tell you, to say to you...
Oh, no, no.
Good evening, Mr. President.
I do solemnly swear...
I do solemnly swear...
To preserve, protect, and defend...
To preserve, protect, and defend...
The Constitution of the United States...
The Constitution of the United States...
So help me God...
So help me God... John, I have a sealed envelope here which I want kept in case of my death.
In case of your death?
The country hates and fears me at the moment. It's not at all inconceivable that one of the people who hate me and fear me so will also end my life.
Oh, I don't think anything like that will happen.
It can. The people don't want me as president. Whether they will accept me or not remains to be seen. We must consider every possible emergency. The country must not be without a president. I've directed them, in the case of my death, to summon the Senate into an immediate special session to choose a president pro tem.
In an hour like this, on your way to Washington as president of the United States, you think of death.
In an hour like this, a president must think of the future of his country. Gentlemen, the circumstances of this inaugural day make it a very sad occasion for me. I took the oath, as you know, in New York City on September the 19th. Today, the 22nd, I have taken it again before you, 40 of the high officials of this government, who will aid me, I hope and trust, as you did the former president in the great task of directing this government. Men may die, but the fabrics of our free institutions remain unshaken. No higher or more assuring proof could exist of the strength and permanence of popular government than the fact that, though the chosen of the people be struck down, his constitutional successor is peacefully installed without shock or strain except the sorrow which mourns the bereavement. It will be earnest endeavor to profit and to see that the nation shall profit by the example and experience of the man who has left us. Summoned to these high duties and responsibilities and profoundly conscious of their magnitude and gravity, I assume the trust imposed by the Constitution, relying for aid on divine guidance and the virtue, the patriotism, and intelligence of the American people.
Good morning. Mr. President.
Well, good morning, Mr. Compton.
Have you read the papers? The papers say that your inaugural address was exactly what the occasion called for. The papers say you have tact and common sense. The papers say
I have read the papers, Mr. Compton.
Well, then you must be very happy about them, Mr. President. The people have accepted you.
I'm very grateful.
Now then, to get down to a discussion of politics, Mr. President.
Mr. Compton, I am no longer a politician.
You're no longer a politician?
No, I am now the President of the United States. The president before me believed that we must get rid of factions and the spoils system. He was conducting a reform administration, and I shall do my best to continue along the lines he laid out.
You can't conduct an administration without some regard for politics.
My dear friend, you have been very good to me. You have done much for me, and I appreciate it. But my first regard is for the nation and for the office. That comes ahead of politics. That comes ahead of myself.
Well, how about the collector of the Port of New York? You're at least going to remove him, aren't you?
Mr. Compton, the former president felt that he was the right man for the job, and I'm not going to remove him now because of the trick that faith has played on all of us. He can be in the customs house as long as he does a good job.
Well, goodbye, Mr. President.
Goodbye, Mr. Compton. Well, you've probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
Say, are you going to be home tonight? Well, it might be a good idea because ABC has a Sunday evening of fine entertainment planned for you. 9 big shows. One of your favorites is Walter Winchell, on the air every Sunday night over most of these same ABC stations. From coast to coast, this dynamic commentator gives listeners the lowdown on the week's highlight happenings. As one of America's leading advocates of democracy, Walter Winchell speaks out, frankly and fearlessly. So don't forget, for a forthright, vigorous commentary on the news of the week, listen when Walter Winchell reports tonight. And treat yourself to 8 other grand Sunday evening shows over most of these same ABC stations. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
A beautiful day for a drive, Senator Jones.
It certainly is, Nellie.
Daddy doesn't often have time for driving now that he's president. He doesn't get enough rest either.
You know she gets more like her mother every day.
You're growing up, young lady. Why don't you have her down to one of the receptions someday?
No. I want her kept out of the public eye. I don't want people to know her as the daughter of the president. And I don't want her to be unhappy when the attentions stop, as they would when a new president gets elected. I want her to be happy now, and then, as the daughter of Chester Allen Arthur. Be with us again next week for another interesting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Until then, goodbye.
Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor picture That Forsyth Woman, starring Errol Flynn, Greer Garson, Walter Pidgeon, and Robert Young. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Dick Woolen. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President Chester A. Arthur.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.